the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, it's no secret, the population of the U.S. is aging. Every single day, 10,000 Americans head into retirement. But how secure is Social Security in the pension system itself? Joining me on the program is Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff. He's the William Fairfield Warren Professor at Boston University. Professor, you have studied Social Security. You have come up with some plans and recommendations about what should be done to fix the system. Let's begin with that, because 70% of the government's budget goes to Social Security, Medicare, and interest on the debt. How do we keep the system secure when its administrator says it's due to run out of money somewhere between 2027 and 2033?
Yeah, let me just correct that statement about the 70%. I think it also includes Medicaid and other entitlement programs like Obamacare subsidies. So anyway, it's a big number, 70%. We're kind of committed to the way we deal with Social Security going broke, and it's absolutely broke. It's in far, far worse shape than the Detroit pensions when they brought Detroit to bankruptcy. The system, those pension plans were about 20% underfunded. They were short about 20% of the money they needed to pay the benefits. Social Security has told us that they're 32% underfunded. They told us that back in July in their annual trustees report. The amount of money that we're short is $34 trillion. That's, you know, like more than 1.5 times official government debt of $20 trillion. So $34 trillion is the off-the-books debt that the government has been hiding from us. And you can't cure this problem by ignoring it. And that's what all the politicians have been doing. And it's not just the Republicans, but also the Democrats. The system's enormous red ink was entirely ignored during the campaign and hasn't been mentioned once by the president since he was elected. So what we're talking about is the prospect of the system running out of money and at a point where it will have to cut benefits if it can't raise taxes dramatically by 25-30% from one day to the next. And people will starve to death, no question about it. We've got 20% of the elderly entirely dependent on Social Security. They will starve to death or go without medication. And if that's what our country is all about these days, well, that's what it's about. But the way we need to address this is to freeze the old system. The system has been run on a Ponzi scheme basis for decades, just like Medicare and Medicaid. The whole government has been running on a Ponzi scheme, including defense spender expenditure. We're taking from the young and giving to the old on an ongoing basis, and we just hide all the liabilities to our official debt, $20 trillion. If you add up all the off-the-books liabilities, including Social Security, you're at $200 trillion in total. So, you know, 90% of our obligations are off the books. So the country's broke. We need to fix things. And the way to fix Social Security is you freeze the system in place. You pay off what you owe, but you don't accrue any additional benefits. And then you require people to contribute, I would say, about 10% of their pay to a personalized account that's co-invested, so everybody's investment return is the same. It's invested by a computer, not by anybody on Wall Street, so there's no money that Wall Street makes out of this. The government would make matching contributions on behalf of the poor to keep it progressive, and then contributors would have their contributions split 50-50 between themselves and their spouses. So if you have a non-working spouse who's watching kids, for example, they'd have an equal-sized account. And then at retirement age, the same computer would gradually, on a cohort, on a birth group basis, take the account balances of the cohort and gradually sell them off at the market price and invest them in inflation index bonds, which are government inflation protected bonds, and then use all that money to pay out pension benefits, annuities that were inflation indexed, that are inflation indexed, inflation protected to participants. So basically, through time, what happens is you have a gradual transition from the old system to the new system. In the end, everybody gets paid off every penny they were owed under the old system, but then we force people to contribute on their save on their own, but do it collectively so it's not that somebody's got a great retirement and somebody else has a lousy one. Now, the other thing I failed to mention is that the proposal includes a guaranteed by the government that the return on the investments over your entire lifetime would be at least what you put in adjusted for inflation. There's a guarantee of your principal under this proposal. And I think this is the way to fix the system, and it can be done tomorrow, and it can eliminate this huge fiscal sword of Damocles hanging over the baby boomers, hanging over the kids. We have a terrible mess.
Professor, let me ask you, what is the likelihood of that happening before we get ourselves into a major crisis? Because the president ran on that, you know, Social Security and Medicare was off limits. Anybody that broaches this subject, it's demagogued in the press. They don't get the facts out. They don't discuss alternatives. Do we have to go through a crisis first before we get to the point where we need to fix it? And usually in a crisis, the best decisions aren't often made.
Well, the way the children running this country proceed, they push us into a crisis whenever possible, because otherwise they can't justify taking any action. No other country acts this irresponsibly. But we're in this boat that, you know, if you have a president who's going to ignore the country's main retirement system going broke, what is there to say beyond that? That this is not an adult running the country. If you have Democrats who are doing the same thing, if you have Bernie Sanders saying that we need to raise benefits, and Nancy Pelosi saying we need to raise benefits when the system is 32% underfinanced, $34 trillion in the red, they want to raise benefits. It's just, you know, unspeakably stupid. Yes, there are a lot of poor people, but we don't want to eliminate their ability to survive by giving everybody more benefits so that no benefits can be paid in the future. And the system is not broken. Now, let me be clear. It's not broke in the future. It's really broke today, because every year we wait, it just gets more broke. So, you know, it's like you think about Detroit as a city. At some point, they realized they couldn't pay off what they were spending into the future. And had they kept going, they would have gotten into worse trouble financially. So they declare bankruptcy. Well, I'm declaring the United States government is bankrupt, and Social Security, as part of that, is certainly bankrupt on its own, and collectively with the rest of the government's finances, is bankrupt. So let somebody say it's bankrupt. Well, I'm happy to say that. But you can also just read that in the trustees' report. Although they hide the fact, I mean, both parties have been putting out Social Security trustees' reports, which hide back in Table 6F1 in the appendix the true status of the system, and they cloak the discussion in language that makes it almost impossible for a layman to understand what's going on. It's called the Infinite Horizon Fiscal Unfunded Liability, but it's not explained in clear English, and there's no discussion in the introduction to the trustees' report that the system is $34 trillion in debt. But if you look at Table 6F1, that's Roman 6F1 in the 2017 trustees report released last July, and you can find it online, pull up Table 6F1, you will see a number of $34 trillion. There it is. And just to put that in perspective, GDP in the U.S. is $20 trillion. So this is well more than a year's GDP. Another way to say this is that we are so broke in Social Security that we have to, according to the government, according to our Social Security actuaries, that we need to work for over a year and a half and consume nothing to put aside enough money to pay the Social Security benefits that are not going to be covered by taxes.
So given the fact they're not doing anything about it, let me bring up another perspective. Next year, it's estimated that the fiscal deficit will be close to $1 trillion. What about, Professor, if our debts keep getting as large as they are now, and we're broke, as you say, that the international markets start intervening in terms of dumping our bonds or forcing interest rates higher? In other words, the international markets force the government to do something very much in the way in the late 70s when Paul Volcker came in and had to jack up interest rates to protect the dollar.
Yeah, as soon as the markets wake up, you know, you have the bond traders from all the different bond traders in Wall Street and Boston, different places, you know, the mutual fund bond traders like Fidelity. I think they understand how broke the country is at some level, but they think nobody else is trading on that. So they're all trying to trade together in a pack, because if they lose money by themselves, they lose their jobs. So consequently, the market's not pricing correctly the problem. And it's just a matter of time. At some point, enough people are going to realize, enough people are going to trade, are also realizing, you know, it's just like, well, if everybody else runs on the market, I'm going to run on the market. And now I'm just waiting to figure out not what's true about the market, about the underlying economics, but one or the other guy is going to run. And of course, that's anybody's guess. So that's why you have markets dropping precipitously from one minute to the next, because it becomes a panic. And, you know, if Wall Street, if you think about why we have crashes and huge increases in prices of securities and then crashes, it's because of this collective trading behavior. And it's largely run by the, quote, professionals who aren't trading on professional knowledge. They're trading of the economy. They're trading on what they think other people are going to do, other people like them. So this is why you get these big runs in the market. This whole thing could come tumbling down at any second. And I mean, literally any second. This is not predictable.
So let me ask you this. One of the issues that you have with Social Security, it's kind of a pay-as-you-go system. And when it was first put in place, I think, what was the worker ratio, 13, 14, or 15 to 1? Today, it's what, 2.5 or 3 to 1, which makes it a real issue if it's a pay-as-you-go system. What is the likelihood that the government would put in a more logical plan that's more sustainable, as you suggest? Because usually when you run into a crisis, whether it's a funding crisis or the international markets force it, usually, as you know, Professor, politicians aren't known to make astute decisions when those things happen.
I think it's very low that we're going to have anything done that makes any sense until Wall Street decides that the U.S. is absolutely bankrupt, which it is. It has been for 2 decades, really, and it's just getting worse and worse. True debt is $200 trillion, and you're walking around talking about it being $20 trillion. You got a problem, and that's the actual, you know, sad reality. So I can't say exactly when things are going to hit the fan, but it can't go on. You know, this is just, even for the United States of America, we can print a lot of dollars. At some point, people will realize we're printing money to pay our bills, and they'll stop taking the dollar. And the dollar has declined of late. Maybe it's connected to this, maybe it's not. But, you know, I don't know. I would have to be elected president to fix this. As far as I can tell, there's nobody else in the country right now who's sufficiently exercised to or has any concrete plans for getting this done or is writing about it. Or I'm sure that, I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure, are as concerned as I am, but they've got, I think a lot of people have just given up talking about this problem.
Let me talk about another issue. It's not just an issue with Social Security, but we're seeing it also at the state level where you're looking at either the state of Illinois and my own state of California, where they're making these assumptions for the pension plan, like my own state, CalPERS, is assuming they're making over 7% returns, and they're not making that in this low interest rate environment. So even at the local level, we have a funding issue. So is it one where, as you suggest, you force in some way a savings that's automatic, 10%, or I don't know what the number is. It's invested in something that's balanced, so there isn't any risk of, as you mentioned, Wall Street interfering. But you have the same issues that we're dealing nationally. We're also dealing at the local level.
Absolutely. The state and local governments have been, with the help of accountants, have been engaged in their own Ponzi scheme. They've been basically undervaluing the liabilities by using assumptions about what rate of return they're going to earn, as if they were going to earn 7% for sure, when the market is saying that the only thing you can earn for sure is 1%. You know, that's what the long-term, if we're talking about inflation index pensions, which I think the CalPERS system is providing, then these are need to be valued, discounted, priced in the marketplace, those liabilities, using a 1% long-term interest rate, because that's what the government pays on long-term inflation index bonds. But they're using 7%. There's an enormous difference. If you discount something at 7%, it looks like nothing. If you discount it at 1%, it can be enormous. And it is enormous. And so they've been lying about the size of the liabilities. They've been using the accounting profession to help them lie. Shakespeare said, first kill the lawyers. He should have said, first kill the accountants, because the accountants have taken our country right down the tubes. Government accountants, state and local government accountants, private accountants, because the private pension funds have engaged in the same kind of thing until they went broke over it, or they saw they were going broke. Either they pushed the liability over to the government via the PBGC, or they just shut down their plans and screwed their workers. And that practice began with IBM in the 1980s. And then one by one, basically every single top U.S. private corporation has reneged on its pension promises. They got people to work for the promise of high pension benefits accruing late in life if they continued to work. And then in their mid-career, they pulled the rug out of people's retirements and said, we're now switching the pension plan, because they had underfunded those plans and couldn't sustain them. So this has happened at the private corporate level, at the state and local government level, at the federal level. This is a country that doesn't care about the next generation. And I think it's connected to our heterogeneity, that we don't see each other as somehow family. And therefore, we don't see somebody else's kids as our kids. We see them as somebody else's kids. And consequently, we care about more about being able to buy whatever guns we want than keeping somebody else's kids safe. I mean, it's just that simple. It's extreme selfishness, as far as I can tell. So that's the country we live in. We don't live in Denmark or Sweden. That's why we are like 30th among countries when it comes to how much we spend in early education on children. I mean, it's just astounding. We're way below Mexico in the list. And, you know, if you look at the kids who need the early education, it's kids from poor, disadvantaged families. And it's the richer people that would have to pay for it. And, you know, frankly, they're white and poor people are black and Hispanic, and that's where things are.
So in terms of this issue, where, as you mentioned, between Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on the debt, that's over 70%. How do you fix this system? Because it's not just Social Security and it's not just Medicare and Medicaid. When you have almost 70% of your budget going to that, and then now, as interest rates are rising, you're going to have a greater portion go to interest on the debt. You know, the fortunate thing, the previous 8 years and for the previous president, when the debt was mounting, interest rates were going down. But now we're going in the opposite direction. So where does the money come from?
Well, again, it's just going to be a matter of when. We're doing completely inappropriate accounting. When I said shoot the accountants, first shoot the accountants, I really meant it. I mean, not literally. I wouldn't go shoot any accountant or ask anybody to shoot any accountant. But the fact that we're doing accounting, which makes it look like somehow things are okay or relatively okay right now, and that the problem's in the future, that's just a matter of the way we are doing cooking the books. If we did the accounting properly, we'd see that the country is entirely broke this minute, not in the future. But given the way we're cooking the books, what you're saying is that with higher interest rates, there will be larger and larger official deficits, and those official deficits will at some point scare the Wall Street into raising interest rates. And at that point, we'll have a financial crisis, and maybe Congress will wake up to the fiscal problem. But will they wake up to the magnitude of it, or will they just try and satisfy the kind of current problem, put another Band-Aid on it? You know, it's not like we haven't had fixes over time to things like Social Security amendments in 1983. The Greenspan Commission supposedly saved Social Security forever. Well, they saved it for their political time in office. That's what the politicians did. And they knew back then in 83 that there was going to be an even bigger problem today. And sure enough, there's a bigger problem today. So they didn't look far enough into the future. They said, we'll leave that for somebody else. So if you think about it like this, you got a cancer patient and the tumor is growing. And you come and you cut out half the cancer, but it's growing rapidly. When the patient comes back, it's even bigger than you saw before. And now you again cut out half of it, comes back, it's four times as big as it was initially. You keep doing it this way, the patient's dying. Patient's going to be dead. That's what we're doing. We're doing too little, too late all the time.
So, Professor, what would you tell the average person that's close to retirement?
I would not hold any long-term government bonds. I wouldn't hold any long-term nominal bonds. I think the government's going to print money to pay its bills, and I think inflation's going to erode the value of those bonds. So I wouldn't be holding any long-term nominal bonds of any kind. There are governments that have their fiscal houses in order, so you could buy maybe New Zealand government bonds or Canadian government bonds or Australian government bonds or maybe even Chilean government bonds, but not American government bonds or American corporate bonds that are paying off a fixed nominal amount in dollars, because that's likely to be watered down by inflation. And I'd say inflation index bonds are safer. I'd say inflation indexed annuities are safe if you can buy it from a relatively reputable insurance company. I think the principal is one company that is marketing them. I don't have any connection with them, by the way, just to make sure that everybody knows. I would not buy an annuity or take my retirement money out in the form of a payment that continues and is not adjusted for inflation. So I'd be very concerned about inflation, because I think that's the first way in which we're going to see this financial crisis erupt in the form of prices going up dramatically. And anybody who's depending on a nominal income is going to be wiped out. And the government's going to say, not my problem. You know, I would be very careful. I would keep working as long as possible. And I would talk to the politicians as much as possible about saving our children, because we have put a curse on their future, on their economic future, a fiscal curse, and they're not going to be able to survive the kinds of tax hikes that are going to be required. And I don't think we're going to be able to cut benefits to the extent that would be required. We're talking in Social Security alone, we're talking about like a 20% benefit cut. You can either raise taxes by about 32% immediately and permanently, or cut benefits by about 22%. That's the trade-off starting today. If you wait, the numbers get worse. I wish I were making up numbers out of the blue. I wish I were not quoting the government's own numbers. You know, this is all terribly upsetting for anybody who's listening. It's upsetting for me to have to tell people. But this is the reality of what our government's been up to for decades. I've been screaming about this 1989. I wrote with some co-authors something called Generational Accounting, an analysis of the true fiscal situation and the long-term problem. I wrote a book called Coming Generational Storm with a co-author, Scott Burns. I wrote a book called Clash of Generations, and they've gotten some attention. I tried to run for president as a writing candidate last time around. The press were not interested because I didn't have money. It wasn't enough to have ideas and honesty about the problem and how to fix things. You needed to have money because they wanted to have a food fight and between people that had money. So that's why we had an entire campaign with no substance about anything. Our discussion right now is more substantive than anything that occurred in any debate between Clinton and Trump, or Trump and any of the other Republican candidates, or Clinton and Sanders. And that's a sad statement, right? And we've said more things about concrete things that cannot be disputed because they're coming right out of the government just in the last half an hour than was said the entire election about our fiscal situation.
All right, Professor. If our listeners would like to follow your work, where can they find you?
Well, if they could go to kotlikoff.net, which is my website, I also have a financial planning software company. And there's a cool tool we just put out called MaxifyPlanner.com, which will help people do as well as possible given the financial threats that we face. And it allows you in the program to cut future Social Security benefits or consider future tax hikes so you can kind of plan for the worst. But it's called Maxify, M-A-X-I-F-I, Planner.com. And it's a tool that will help you stay safe and help you make the best of a bad situation. So that's one important thing. We can't compound the problems our government is presenting us. We have to do the best we can in terms of not spending too much, saving enough, understanding what it means if we retire early, what will the cost of that mean? Should we be downsizing our home? Should we be moving to a state with lower housing costs or taxes? All these things are examined by the software.
All right. Well, listen, Professor, as always, I want to thank you for joining us on the program. All the best to you, sir, and I hope to talk to you again.
Yeah, anytime. This has been good. Thanks so much.
That concludes my interview with Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff, one of the critics of the way Social Security and our entitlement system is being handled. As he mentioned there, it's $34 trillion of unfunded, just like the state pensions that are having problems. The same thing is occurring at the federal level, which makes it incumbent, as he just said, that we better start thinking about taking care of ourselves, because they may end up reneging on those promises in the future. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.